put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build our world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Yeah. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Welcome to season 2 yoga edition of BYO Blanket, a podcast where we get cozy, discuss interesting topics to uplift, inspire, and contribute. All of it inside a blanket fort. Before we start, let's go over to Janan for a quick message. Janan?
Hello, Blanket Ninjas. It is your favorite Blanket Ninja, right after your first favorite Blanket Ninja, Maria. This is Janan. So, as always, at the beginning of the episode, I'll tell you guys, go over to patreon.com/BYOBlanket, and that's Patreon, patreon.com/BYOBlanket. It is a subscription site where you can basically give us a little bit of money every month to support the show, allow us to do bigger and better things as time goes on, and each level that you sign up for has different swag involved. So $1 a month, you get a saying thank you. More than that, we got like $3, $5, $7, $10 a month tiers. There's different things that you'll get for that. We're going to actually come out with stickers and I think we're trying to make a frisbee.
Spiritual frisbee.
Yes, spiritual frisbee to give out. And anyway, it really helps us out so we can start doing like video episodes and episodes where we travel and get on even bigger and more badass guests. Not that any of our guests weren't already. Simply that, I don't know, we can get some like famous people. So if you can't support monetarily, simply share about BYO Blanket on social media, tell your friends to listen, and please review us on iTunes. Unless it is not 5 stars, then don't bother. Back to you, Maria.
Oh, what a great argument, Janan. I love it. Thank you. And everybody, welcome to our podcast.
Yay!
I'm Maria.
I'm Janan.
And today, it's a very special episode because we have awesome guest ninjas.
And the guest ninjas are, drumroll please.
Does it sound like a drumroll?
Yeah.
I hope it does.
It's us!
Yay!
We're our own guests.
Janan and Maria, Maria and Janan.
It's just Maria and Janan in the blanket fort. Yeah.
Yeah, so another change that we decided to make, not a change, I guess an upgrade for season 2 is we will do episodes where it's just Janan and I. And
so we can talk even more.
Way more.
I love talking.
You live talking?
I love.
Oh, I thought you say I live talking.
No, kind
also
of.
Also accurate.
I do. I talk for a living.
Yeah, we
teach yoga, stand-up comedy, podcast.
That's exciting.
Never shut up. But it's all right, because I like the things I say, and I think most people do.
Weird if you didn't.
Hey, if you didn't know us, I don't know how you wouldn't know this, and maybe you don't, you know? Maybe you found this podcast rather randomly, and if so, hello. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Maria and I are married together. Like, we married each other. So
married together.
Yes. Anyway.
We're married to each other.
Yes. We're not just married women who hang out with their partners not around. We're married. So I want to do a little icebreaker question so the our listeners can get to know us a little better. And I'm going for a little more of a hot topic, like a hot button item, than we would ask a normal guest since it's you and I and we're very comfortable. And the question is, what religion did you grow up and what do you consider yourself now?
Well, I grew up Roman Catholic. I did. I went to private schools. Even when I moved to Oklahoma, because that was in Ecuador when I lived in Ecuador. And even when I moved to Oklahoma, I went to Catholic school. Mm. And what do I identify as now is rather interesting because culturally speaking, I still find myself, I don't want to say attached, but identifying as Catholic and somewhat Christian.
Huh.
The religiously, I don't know. I don't necessarily go to church a lot unless it's with my family.
It's Christmas.
Christmas, yeah, pretty much. And But I do find myself, you know, usually it's like when I thank God, and not like, oh, thank God, but I mean like really thanking the higher being for something great that's happening or opportunities that I'm getting or when I'm, or when, you know, when anything's happening and I pray, I do find myself doing that in a more Christian-y way than anything else. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It answers it. Good job.
Perfect.
Whenever someone says higher being, I always think they're saying bean. I'm like, I like pinto beans. That's my highest bean.
That's funny. What about you?
Side note. Okay. By the way, it's Easter weekend. Speaking like topical, right?
Oh, yeah. Very topical.
It's Easter's.
Easter's.
Yes. Easter, yeah. Which our traditional religions have very opposing views on like what went down on Easter back in the day.
Right.
So anyway, I was raised very strict Sunni Muslim, and I put the adjectives very strict on it because as I've grown up and, you know, now I'm an adult, I've met other Muslims who did not have such a strict upbringing as I did. And I was like surprised because I just thought all Muslims were just religiously like very, very, very strict. And yeah, no, there's, you know, just like you have fundamental Christians or Jews, Hindus, anything like that. There's also those of Muslims, and the majority are not super duper strict like I was raised. And not that it was like a bad way that I was raised, and I don't really like it like nowadays. I definitely, like you, like, yes, historically, I'm a Muslim. Kind of like Islam works in the way that, you know, if your dad is Muslim, you're Muslim, kind of with Judaism. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely have a much broader belief system now than I was raised. And if I considered myself, like if I were to check off a box on a list of religions, I think it would be Taoism. I would be a Taoist. But yeah, I nowadays see the beauty in really all religions and all belief systems and believe that anyone can practice their faith in a like positive and helpful way. And it's correct and fine. And anytime someone's being violent, no matter what religion they are, especially if they're doing it in the name of religion, I don't really think that is a true religion. I just think that's like a misconstrued way of believing that religion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Coffee, it does. Coffee is kicking in.
I see that. Yeah.
Anyway, it is a little related to the episode topic today.
In a way, it is. Yeah. Yeah. So our topic for today is rather interesting. And Janan, do you want to introduce it?
Yes. I got to pick the topic this time. Next time we do a Just Wives episode, Maria will pick the topic. My topic is yoga in the West.
Why'd you pick that topic?
So I teach yoga in the West.
Okay.
I was born and raised in the West, even though I have half of me is from the East. When I first started yoga, I really didn't know what it was. And like, I didn't know its roots or anything like that. I just knew that I really, really loved like what I was being taught in the room. Like it helped me out in my life. It felt really good in my body. And as we all know, you know, when there's like a physical health, then mental health is easier to have. So started doing a lot of yoga and teaching a lot of yoga and then learning about its roots. And you know, if you don't know this, it's hard for people to not know this nowadays. Yoga comes from India. It comes from the East. And so we've got this whole phenomenon over here where yoga is a multi-million dollar industry.
Billion.
Is it billion now?
Oh, yeah. It's over $10 billion market.
Oof. Well, yoga has taken off over here in the North American continent and all over the world, too. It's not just over here. And yet I'm only going to speak for America because we're American. So that's going to be the topic today is white people yoga.
Well, that's not just America. Mm-mm. There's white people yoga. Even white people yoga includes a lot of nationalities
Europeans,
outside of American, yeah.
Canadians, yeah. Well, anyway, I'm talking today specifically about people who one would consider white. That's so broad, I know.
Yeah.
And them doing yoga. And all of the... It's a topic that I'm very passionate about. And as I was teaching yoga this week, like one of the themes of class was turn your complaints into commitments. And one of the things that I complain about is other people complaining.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's so when other people complain, I'm like, why are you complaining?
And then you, yeah.
And so
it's funny to me.
I see the irony in it. And so today I am committed to this subject. I'm very passionate about, like, people laying down their complaints and coming into understanding and connection with one another. So that's why I picked this topic in general, was to talk about something that people generally argue about in a way where it's not arguing.
So I guess a little bit of background, if you don't know much or have read about yoga, and I don't mean like philosophy or anything, I just mean like culturally speaking, like it became yoga in the last 10 or so years has become this like pop culture, like wellness type of practice, right? Like everybody knows it. It's not unusual to see people walking down the streets and like yoga tights or yoga clothes with a yoga mat. And it's just like, yeah, you're doing yoga.
Yeah.
And you've got, you know, Instagram and what that portrays as far as yoga goes. And there's a lot of debate as to what, like whether Westerners or the Westernized cultures and countries practice yoga the right way. Mm. And this
the right way.
Or the right way, right? Like, mm-hmm. like there's this whole, and it comes from multiple groups, right? There's a lot of groups and where it's rooted and everything. But the idea is that, or I guess their argument is that yoga, we don't do yoga right in the West, essentially, mm-hmm. right? That's what it boils down to. And then, and again,
so, I mean, it just makes me think, like, what does that mean? My entire career is like a lie, you know?
You're a fraud.
I'm a fraud.
I guess.
Yeah, I've got Sanskrit tattooed on me. I don't even speak Sanskrit.
How dare you?
Wait, so where were you going with that?
So the reason why I'm saying this is because I know why you picked this topic. And I mean, aside from what you just said, like, I know you're very passionate, and I know why this became a thing that you started researching mm-hmm. and started talking about.
Yep.
Do you want to give a little background on that story?
Okay. So, listeners, I am currently writing a book about this subject. I'm well into chapter 2 now and looking for publishers. So if there's any publishers out there,
hit us up.
So, I happened across, like, last summer, an article written by, and I don't remember this person's name off the top of my head, but it was a university professor that was, like, the professor of, like, Indian studies, and it was an article that declared yoga is a misappropriation of Indian culture. How dare they? Basically was the gist of this, like, article within academia. And as someone who teaches in a very American way, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. You know, the style of yoga that I practice is, well, first of all, it's Baptiste yoga is the main style that I practice. It's, there's not a lot of Sanskrit involved. It's called power vinyasa yoga, vinyasa being as another Sanskrit word, and power obviously being an English word. It's not that I took offense to that article, but more so was saddened that someone and a group of people that also have that belief system so misunderstand and disconnect from what I'm doing. And started to write this comedy book called American Yoga, because this whole thing makes me laugh. It's like everything that we do as Americans can be like a little ridiculous, like when looked at it from outsider's perspective. And just because that we've got this like wacky American culture doesn't mean it's bad or wrong, you know, as provided that we're not talking about anything that causes violence, of course. And it's something I believe should be celebrated. Then we get into the whole topic of, I went down a rabbit hole, which was when I was like, wow, I could do a whole book about this, of cultural misappropriation and the war cry against, for lack of a better word, white people using things from other people's cultures, because apparently white people are the most powerful ones, and therefore they're using a culture of lesser powers stuff for their benefit, and then that is what cultural misappropriation is, and then they don't like honor the tradition of it. So there's a big, huge topic that involves just more than yoga. It's really on the, if you look at why people get pissed about the yoga part of it, it's this bigger conversation that's been occurring globally of things we've been arguing about for the longest time, and that's
race
and, religion,
yeah.
Who's right, who's wrong.
Yeah.
So it is a huge topic, and it's a big thing to have that be my mission in my life, but it is my mission in my life to dissolve the conflict and have folks come into connection.
I think that's great, you know,
and I think it's pretty great too.
Here's the thing, you know, it's like you said before, you're committed to turning complaints into commitments,
mm-hmm.
and it's, I think it's a lot better to find, like you said, connection rather than just complain.
Mm-mm. And I mean, okay, the cool thing about the subject too is yoga itself has its own, like what yoga is, especially when we're going into the traditional side of it, is it's union. Yeah, yoga is like bringing separation into unity, and then, I mean, there's so many words that describe that, like
and that's
nirvana, Ishvara Pranidhana, which is, we talked about it very briefly on the last episode.
We did, yeah.
Being the last of the niyamas, and it means connection to source.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last limb of yoga, if you're looking at the eight limbs, is samadhi. Samadhi meaning, so hard to explain. If I were to say it in just a few words,
the bliss
of oneness.
Yeah.
Like the, not just understanding that everything is one, but the being that everything is
like
one.
Like the experience of.
Yeah, enlightenment.
Yeah.
So,
what I was going to say is like that essentially, what that essentially says is like it's a big known, almost a tagline of yoga in the Western world, that it combines mind, body, and soul.
Mm-hmm. And it's a holistic practice.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's more than just the weird poses that you see.
Yeah.
Look,
I'm not saying that everyone in the whole world, or even everyone in the West, or all white people practice yoga in an appropriate way. Like, I'm going to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, because I believe everyone is coming from their highest commitment, even if it doesn't seem like it from the outside, right? I don't believe that anyone is utilizing yoga to cause harm, and there are folks that could be exceptions to the rule, Bikram Chowdhury, but, you know.
Well, it's more than just them.
Yeah, yeah. We know about the scandals that occur in, like, the yoga or spiritual communities with, like, harassment cases and... Here's the thing is yoga is not a human. Like the concept of yoga, it's not a human, right? It's practiced by humans.
So let me ask you this. Yoga is, you know, this very deep, ancient, like thousands mm-hmm. of year old, like philosophy and teachings and mm-hmm. practices
mm-hmm.
that when it moved to the West, suddenly when you look up yoga and like it's often that you find scandals, right? Like
mm-hmm.
yoga here in the West started as this like elite, you know, where like the most predominant elite and controversial, like that's what it revolved around,
yeah.
right? And eventually got commercialized. And do you think that is where a lot of the issues stem from? Because it mm-hmm. goes from this really deep ancient philosophy to harassment cases and mm-hmm. money and greed and the elite and all that stuff.
Well, I think that's just one little slice of the pie of the whole debate that's going around with Western yoga. And that slice of the pie is, you know, it's existed. And it goes back to what I say is like yoga is practiced by flawed human beings. Even the greatest masters of yoga have flaws. Like, I think, was it last? I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or if this was just a separate conversation. Is that it's now known that like Gandhi was kind of racist?
Oh,
you know?
I don't remember if we talked about that in the last, but I know we.
That's like a thing, right?
Yeah.
Some of the greatest leaders like have cheated on their wives, right? And then you could go into the people we consider evil, like Hitler painted. Oh my God, he did art. Yeah. So it goes to show that these things, these concepts that have such beauty and purity to them, are practiced by imperfect beings.
We're very complex beings.
And so, yeah, that's a slice of the pie of why there could be some discomfort around yoga happening in the West. Because look, before it moved over here, it was like 1920s era, Krishnamacharya is teaching yoga philosophy in combination with British gymnastics back in India. Many of his disciples came to the West, like BKS Iyengar, for example, and taught yoga here. So this was also during the time of rapid expansion in transportation. Like, it's the first time in our world where you could go from one across the world in, you know, a day. Whence before the late 1800s, like, you know, before the Industrial Revolution, like, a journey across the world was, like, it could kill you easily, like, easily. So long story short, you can read all about this in my book when I write it. long story short, before all of the expansion of, like, the media and world news, who knows what scandals were happening within the yoga community? You know what I mean? Like, who knows, like, in the 5,000 years of the yoga people existing in India, what those dudes and women did, you know? Again, it's just a practice practiced by flawed human beings. And we don't have a ton of evidence of, like, scandals that occurred back then in the name of yoga or anything like that. And I'm sure it happened.
It's also part of, like, this social revolution. And I mean social in, like, social media.
Mm-hmm.
Revolution that everything is out there. Everything gets out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's you can find out so much information about just about anybody.
Everything is scrutinized.
Everything. And you can write, you can publish anything you want. Like, there's just this overload of information.
Everything is scrutinized and then weirdly also generalized, right? You'll find, like, one little thing you'll read on the internet and that's the idea you have about that subject.
Exactly.
You know, or a bunch of little things and that's the idea you have about that subject without realizing that there is just an infinite amount of experiences out there. And so someone else's experience is, like, I mean, it's honestly none of my business. Yeah, I only have mine.
Right.
So I'm only responsible for mine. One thing that just popped into my head from what we were just saying, what was it? We're talking about, so ancient yoga was supposed to only have been practiced by men. So that's a thing.
Yeah.
So it's not something that we talk about a lot, and it's a thing that yoga was a man-only thing. And as we all know, there in India, traditionally, there's a caste system, right? Of if you're born into the certain caste, it was not impossible to, like, do work of another caste. So only certain members of Indian society were, like, allowed to practice yoga, and none of them were women. And then yoga comes to the West, and look who doing all that yoga. Right? Look who's talking about the yoga right now. Two women, two lesbians, in fact.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think that is awesome, right? Like, it's something that broke out of its shell. Because as we were talking with Sarah last 2 weeks ago in the episode about the yamas and niyamas, is yoga as a subject, and really it could be any subject, should be living and breathing with the time that it's in. So we're not, like, attempting to live by rules of the past. And while some traditions are great because they've been they're timeless, right? Like, it's timeless to be nonviolent.
I would agree so, yeah.
There are others that are definitely very seated and rooted in that time period. And as humans evolve and as the earth evolves and as society evolves.
Cultures.
Yeah, if we don't practice a little non-attachment, which is another thing in yoga to practice, non-attachment, then things stagnate, right? And things stop making sense. Like, for example, if you've ever had clothes from your teenage years, right? And then you change sizes between teenage years and adult years, and you go and constantly try to wear your teenage clothes, not gonna be very comfortable. I'm gonna look very good. And I think a person will be continually frustrated as they force themselves into old clothes that don't fit. Great metaphor, Janan.
Wow. Yeah, that...
It's as simple as that, though. Forcing yourself into something.
It is. What's up?
We were experiencing the Harvard pause.
No. I thought that happened with more people. But anyways, when it's more people around. But anyways, I was going to say something. So I think this is something that all of the religions and philosophies and teachings, especially ancient ones, really struggle with, is the cultural aspect of it. Mm. Because if you think about it, everything religious, everything ancient was almost everything was a male only. Mm-hmm. From a certain, like, society, certain, like, status.
There are just rigid social norms.
Very, very much so. And eventually, sure, it evolved to where now, you know, women can go to church and you know, women can practice yoga
or
whatever.
They can be vicars.
They can be vicars, if you've never seen that show.
The Vicar of Dibley is a wonderful old hilarious British comedy. Please watch it.
Yes. And it's still, like, I think this is something I find fascinating as far as, like, the evolution of cultures and religion and everything. It's that same idea of, you know, how do you keep and maintain the traditions and what traditions are worth keeping versus how do you, you know, like, evolution. I don't know. And I think it's, I don't, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that some people, especially those who defend yoga as this, like, Hindu or Hinduism type of practice, this very deep Indian mm-hmm. philosophy, mm-hmm. Is that it has changed so much here in the West and in modern yoga mm-hmm. that at some point it's different.
Yeah.
And they view it as different.
Yeah.
To whereas to us, it's modern.
Yeah.
It's evolved.
It simply branched off, mm-hmm. and it's still connected to the same trunk. Another great metaphor, Janon.
Yes, fantastic one.
You know, two things I want to make sure I hit on before the episode is over, and take mental note, Maria, so you can remind me if I forget later. Two things. One is the yogic principle of aparigraha, non-attachment. I want to talk about that a little bit more in depth. And the second is the, how do I say it in a way that makes sense? The prominence of a victimized culture. I'll explain that. I can go into that one first. I'm going to go into that one first. Is that cool?
Go for it.
Okay. So what I mean by that is, and I know that could have already struck a chord in someone that heard this, of like, is it the word victim? Yeah, it's a pretty loaded word, and I'm of the belief, right, like I'm about that complaints come from victimhood, comes from victimization. And while, like, as we all know, or at least me and Maria know, the language of English is a little clunky in its linguistics. Like, victim is so, like, it can mean so many different things. There's not quite a word that I'm looking for, and so I'm going to use victim as the word, because there is such thing as, like, being a victim of a crime, right? Like, someone did violence against me, victim of the crime.
I guess that would be the literal definition.
Yeah, that's, like, the literal definition of it. And then there's a definition that I'm more referring to of victimization, of the state of being a victim. So yes, while I might have been a victim of a crime, then I could be in the state of a victim. And being in that state of a victim is gonna create this environment, like this internal, mental, emotional environment of being on the defense. And being on the defense is breeding grounds for separation, right? Like, it's me against blah, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway.
I'm tracking.
You're tracking. I found this this article. So to give you a little background on it, the title of the article is In Defense of Cultural Appropriation. Okay. In this article, he is talking about how basically in human history, in all of human history, the mixing of cultures is something that occurs naturally as like evolution. And that nowadays, we collapse culture and race into one thing, and race is a very hot topic. Race is a subject that is still very touchy for many people, from like past violences or even like current violences, in fact. And so in collapsing race and culture, there's separation that's created, because it's like, okay, your culture or your race is not allowed to portray my race in this way. But we just use the word culture. Like, we've been using, like, your culture isn't allowed to use my people's culture because your culture is more powerful. So, this article's really long.
So while you look for that specific paragraph, one of the things that you just reminded me of is when I was reading the Journal of the American Academy of Religion, I was reading a few of the issues that they had, and there was one specific that talked about yoga phobia. And the way the author defines yoga phobia, it's like a social anxiety that's characterized by like the suspicion or fear of modern yoga, meaning like what we practice in the West. And essentially what he argued is that yoga phobia comes from a place of a misconstrued idea of what religion, specifically Christians and Hindu, like what that religion is versus what they think it should be.
It goes back to my childhood of being raised a very extreme version of Islam that, like, when I tell that to other Muslims nowadays, they're like, whoa, that is
not what
that's not what I was told when I was a kid. And yeah, exactly. I found the passage.
Let
me read it now. It's in the middle of the article. He starts with talking about how certain white actors get a lot of scorn for like playing roles that are outside of their race. Yeah, because it's like, you know, if you're not that race, like, what are you doing taking a role away from someone who is that race, right? It was like in the movie Aloha, a white woman played a half Chinese, half Hawaiian woman, and like, you know, got like critics were like, it's so bad, it's so misappropriation of like Hawaiian culture, stop it from happening. Which, yes, true. Like, do have more Hawaiian culture displayed in a way that people can digest it. Great. But no one got pissed at, like, Forrest Whitaker for playing an African guy, even though he's American. And no one got pissed at that British dude for playing Abraham Lincoln, even though he's British, because they were the same skin color. They weren't the same culture, but they were the same skin color. So he asks, like, if we define all roles, like all acting roles, by their race, will we define all actors by their race rather than their abilities? And isn't that quintessentially racist? So, like, would we have all left-handed characters played by left-handed actors? And isn't acting itself make-believe, where an actor is actually praised for being someone else so different from their self in such a convincing and heartfelt way, right? It's like a form of empathy even. So anyway, he says, in the past couple of decades, racism has begun to be redefined in terms of power rather than prejudice or skin color alone. In his 1991 book, Dismantling Racism, The Continuing Challenge to White America, Joseph Barnt explains, racism goes beyond prejudice. It is backed up by power. Racism is the power to enforce one's prejudices. More simply stated, racism is prejudice plus power. End quote. This has led to a gradual shift in the moral landscape. And so these sociologists have this book called The Rise of Victimhood Culture, Microaggressions, Safe Spaces, and New Culture Wars. They posit that Western society since the Renaissance has been dominated by three main moral cultures. The first is the honor culture that thrived when, like, institutions for resolving interpersonal disputes were limited or non-existent. So they mean, like, there were no courts or school boards or HR departments. It was literally, like, person to person. Deprived of outside sources of arbitration, individuals jealously defended their own reputations, at times fighting to the death over minor slights. To do otherwise risked inviting predation. So he's saying, like, you know, before that, there's an honor culture where you defended your own honor, and that's, like, where you get the the comical, like, reenaction of people dueling, like, walking 10 paces, turning around, shooting each other. Then there, as laws and institutions of authority formed, however, honor culture gradually gave way to a culture of dignity. So dignity culture. Dignity exists independently of what others think. So a culture of dignity is one in which public reputation is less important. Insults might provoke offense, but they no longer have the same impact as a way of establishing or destroying a reputation for bravery. So instead of resolving conflicts with violence, people began to seek mediation through the government or other civic institutions. It produced very obvious benefits, like black suffrage, women's suffrage, marriage equality for gays and lesbians. In a dignity culture, every person is said to have inherent value, regardless of race, gender, religion, intelligence, or social status. Now, here's the big thing. Here's the big thing. As time has passed, though, dignity culture has been coupled with what Campbell and Manning call a victimhood culture, which blends the elements of both its predecessors. Like the adherents of an honor culture, members of a victimhood culture tend to be highly sensitive to slights, but rather than responding with violence, as they are inclined, like members of a dignity culture, to seek redress through boycotts and group protest. In a victimhood culture, moral authority is determined by the color of one's skin.
What I'm hearing is that the way it is perceived in some groups that oppose yoga in the West is that they are taking someone's culture and profiting off of it.
Mm-hmm. And there's appropriation, right? Which is nothing wrong with appropriation, because we're talking about misappropriation. That's like bad appropriation. There's appropriation and there's theft. Theft is where if, let's say, someone has a Ganesh statue in their house, like a Hindu person, and I walk into their house and I steal it and I take it and they no longer have the statue and it's mine now. That's theft, right? Appropriation is being like, oh, like I love what that symbolizes. Not only that, I mean, it looks really cool and I might not know its deep meaning, but like I would love to print this on a t-shirt. That person still has their statue. That person still has their religion, and I've printed a t-shirt. Right, I've brought something into like a popular culture in a way that definitely is unique to me, my perspective, and dare I say it, my whiteness. That doesn't make it inherently bad. And if someone is concerned with their culture either being misrepresented or not represented enough, I posit that that person then make a stand, like create a stand, like, hey, I'm going to go out and be committed to showing people what, like the, what this asana means, what this pose means, I'm committed to that, and go out there and do it. Versus simply argue with someone that they think is in opposition.
So you mentioned just now theft. Mm-hmm. And this reminded me of something I just read because there was, I think it was in the Washington Post, there was this doctor that release this whole article that I think it's called The Theft of Yoga, mm-hmm. to which he argues essentially what you just said, which mm-hmm. is that the practice of yoga in the West is like yoga itself is intellectual property. And by us practicing it, he is a victim of overt intellectual property theft.
So he literally just says, hey, I'm a victim. It's the word power that I believe gets people into trouble because it's a vague word and it's variable. Power could be what? Economic power. It could be political power, physical power, persuasive power of words, charismatic power. Is it power from media? Is it power from individual people? Is it power from government? It's just so broad. Like when we talk about which culture has more power, right? Which race really? Forgive me for collapsing those again. Which race has more power?
Yeah.
By simply saying, hey, your race has more power than mine, I'm making that true by continuing to repeat those words. What if I didn't say those words and I went along my merry way and lived the most powerful life I could possibly live? Whether it's from a commitment to upholding my racial integrity and positivity and the culture that surrounds my race, or it's individual power. In the whole idea of who has more power, that is really what will continue to breed separation. And here's the thing. It's not that I don't realize my privilege. I totally do. Incredibly grateful for it. I'm also not going to just like throw it aside because I was born into some privilege. In fact, I'm going to use it to the best of my abilities to deliver on what I'm committed to, and that is elevating the world around me, dissolving conflict, as I said. And I believe that most folks are consciously doing their best with what they have. And while it's not ideal in some cases, and definitely I'm not speaking for people who choose on purpose like violence and hatred, I'm not speaking for them at all, because they can be of any race, not just white, right? If everyone is really doing their best, why complain about it? Okay, if me and you were arguing, Maria, about something, like if you did something I didn't like and I just complained about it, we're going to immediately have an issue. You know what I mean?
Well, like, it's just annoying. It's more than anything.
Yeah, and it's you'll come to your defense, you know, and then boom, we're in an argument.
Not even that, because let's just say that I'm complaining about whatever, right? And then I'm just complaining and you're just like, Maria, hold on, like, stop. Like, let's fix this. Let's just talk about it. And I'm like, no, complain. It just, like, it goes in circles. It doesn't matter if you're trying to do something or, like, working towards resolution. If I'm stuck and complain, then I'm literally stuck and complain and nothing. It's just going to keep growing.
Yeah, like, okay, here's a very small example. And don't worry, it has nothing to do with our actual lives. Let's say we've got to go somewhere together, and Maria's taking forever to get ready, to go into the stereotype of women with long hair take forever to get ready. Stop. And I go, oh, like, you always take so long. It always makes me like, ugh. And that's a complaint. Argument right there. Listeners, you can totally vibe with that. That probably happens to you pretty often.
Or happens at you.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's, hey, Maria, I have a commitment to being on time, and something like I'm really, like, passionate about and committed to of being on time. Can you be ready in X amount of minutes? Can that answer me now, wife? If yes. I say that to you versus, ugh, I hate when you make me late, which one will you receive better?
Oh, yeah. The right? commitment.
And then how would you receive that when I say that? If I say, hey, I'm committed to being on time.
Right. That helps me understand your commitment. Mm-hmm. And because my commitment to you as a partner is to support you and be there for you, I'm not going to make you late. It's like, oh my God, I got it. Like, I'm committed to also being on
connection
time.
Connection and commitment. High five. Marriage.
Yeah.
So, that's a whole nother talk, but it's just commitments.
Yeah. That. We'll leave that for another
episode. What I'm going for is, by complaining that someone is racist or using your culture wrong or making money off of selling t-shirts that have Ganesh printed on them, by complaining about it, it solves
hashtag
nothing.
#namaste.
Hashtag namaste. No, never say that again.
I was trying to trick you into saying it.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's adorable and touches my heart that someone who isn't Indian, who isn't Hindu, allows themselves to be open to images of beautiful Indian deities, allows himself to be open to these super challenging asanas, allows himself to be open to oming at the end of a class or saying the word namaste, incorporating it into our popular culture. I think it's a beautiful assimilation. And our whole lives from this get-go of human startingness was people utilizing each other's experiences and interactions and uplifting themselves with them.
That's how civilizations grow.
We are, like, look, English, the words of English are from Latin. So it's, you know, it's everything. Remember Apari Graha? I was going to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, talk about it.
Okay. In terms of aparigraha, which means non-attachment, this cool thing about doing this about yoga is yoga itself is all about connection. As we said at the beginning, it's union.
Connection.
So it's like ridiculously hilarious to me that folks get upset that yoga is being done by more people outside of a culture. Basically, people are getting upset that the idea of yoga is happening, right? Like, the promise of yoga is happening. They're like, no, wait, we got to build back up walls. We got to build back up fences. you're not doing it right, right? Just by saying someone's not doing it right is a judgment. So attachment is, the reason it's one of the yogic virtues, non-attachment, is because attachment breeds, what, Maria? What does attachment breed?
Suffering.
Yeah, attachment breeds suffering. And us humans do need, like, there's a balance of attachment, right? Like, I'm attached to you, so I love you and I decided to marry you, right?
Yay.
I'm attached to...
water.
I'm attached to seeming normal in society, so I decide to wear clothes.
Well, yes.
You know? Like, I'm not saying all attachments are bad. And over-attachment. Over-attachment is where the suffering occurs, because then I get attached to this needing to be this particular way, and it's got to look like this, or it's wrong.
And then like the right way.
Yeah. Yeah, like being attached to something being the right way is when I immediately drop into separation. Immediately drop into I'm right, you're wrong. My ideas are right, your ideas are wrong. And it all boils down to life is a giant Chinese finger trap. Talk about cultural reappropriation right now. Chinese finger trap. I'm sure everyone knows what it is. If you don't...
Did you talk about it during the last episode, or am I just...
No, I talked about it in my last class.
Okay, I just got like a deja vu and like...
I talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
As a kid, they fascinated me, and
they
I didn't know why.
They are fascinating. Yeah.
And as an aspiring Taoist, it's like Taoism in a nutshell, or in a tiny finger basket. So it's literally like a cylindrical basket with openings at both ends. You put each finger into a side, right? For those of you who know what it is, you're just like, okay, I know what it is. So as you pull out, the basket tightens and your fingers get caught. So it's struggle, separation. When you bring your fingers together and like then softly allow your fingers to relax out of it, boom, you're out of the Chinese finger trap. And it's just like that. The paradox is that as I accept other people, their perspectives, even the ones that are complaining, when I accept them and be like, look, I get it. It sucks. And I get what you're committed to. When I come into my stand of commitment, into my relaxation of what is, that is when conflict dissolves. That's when someone is seen and heard and they no longer have to defend themselves. And that's when that connection is born, the yoga, the union is born of what I believe this life is all about.
Yeah, and I mean, think about it. I think as humans, one of the beautiful things, and I mean like specifically with in comparison to other animals, at least to our knowledge, is that we do have these huge differences, culture, religion, physical, like mental, everything. Like, mm-hmm. like we are so distinct from one another, and our thoughts are different, and we can, and we change, and, mm-hmm. and
change.
They change, and it's so beautiful, and we're not all the same. We don't all think the same, and no. I think that makes life beautiful.
The only thing that's the same, you just said it, is change.
Exactly. I mean, we all go through, you know, for lack of better words, shit. Mm-hmm. We all go through awesome things. Mm-hmm. We all have our ups and downs. And I think that is what brings us into union, regardless of what your opinion of yoga or religion or this or that is.
Yeah.
Like, we are all the same, and we are so different that it makes it awesome.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear. We tackled a huge subject today.
We did.
So, listeners, thank you so much for listening to that. I feel very heard by, especially if you're here at the end of the episode. Hi. And if you do know me IRL, feel free to talk about this with me anytime you'd like, because I love it. I'd love to hear your opinions.
Or hit us up on social media if you don't know us.
I even like to hear complaints, because look, as soon as you get a complaint out to someone who is clear on their commitment, it can get out of the way and we can come into connection. You know? Like, if you give me, like, what's been on your mind, we can come into connection. And feel free to resolve your complaint before you even talk to me. I'm fine with that, too.
We are committed to hearing,
yes.
Whether that is things that we agree with or not.
And look, I realize it was pretty ballsy for me to be, like, tackling race, basically, and tackling victimhood, the culture of victimhood,
culture
of misappropriation here on a little podcast in Houston. In a blanket fort.
Yeah. Out of all places.
I realize that that's ballsy, and that's the kind of person I am. Ballsy. I didn't think this episode would end like that, and yet it does end like that. Any last ballsy words, wife?
Thank you guys for listening. We really do appreciate it, and we will continue to, you know, listen to what you guys have to say, read your reviews, and if you have any suggestions, and if you have... you know, any articles or any information and you want to contribute to this conversation, feel free to hit us up.
Yep.
And also a huge thank you to Studio Sassafras in Houston and John Edward, our producer, because guys,
this is
how
a nice
awesome
podcast.
Do I sound right now?
Yeah.
I mean, hello. It's nice. It's comfortable. It's a space where you can be creative, whether that is with a podcast or singing or playing instruments, yeah. Whatever.
Basically, if you live in Houston and you've got something to record, come to Studio Sassafras, and that's studiosassafrasmusic.com.
Thank you for listening.
We love you guys.
You guys are
please,
awesome.
If you notice yourself complaining about anything, get yourself a pat on the back. Realize that you're an adorable human being and remember what you're committed to.
Commitments.
On
that note,
we bid you adieu.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.